The following is election special coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this debate for the 96th district in the Wisconsin State Assembly. My name is Anthony Trigoski, and I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science and Public Administration at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Thank you so much for joining us today. The candidates for the 96th district are Representative Lauren Oldenburg and Jane Swigum. Lauren Oldenburg is the candidate of the Republican Party, and Jane Swigum is the candidate of the Democratic Party. The format for this debate is as follows. Each candidate will receive up to 1 minute for an opening statement. Then the members of our media panel will take turns asking questions of the candidates. When asked a question, each candidate will have up to 1 minute to respond. We'll alternate which candidate responds first to each question and which candidate responds second. As moderator, I may opt to extend a round of questioning by giving each candidate an additional 30 seconds to engage in further discussion. We will conclude the debate with closing statements by each candidate. We have a fantastic media panel today asking questions of these candidates. Our media panel today includes Jordan Fremstead from WKBT News 8 Now, Joe Minnie from WXOW News 19, Bob Heiss from the La Crosse Tribune, and Ezra Wall from Wisconsin Public Radio. The League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area is generously providing assistance with keeping track of speaking time. Thank you, Mary Nugent, for providing this assistance. To make everything go smoothly, we simply ask the candidates to refrain from interrupting one another, and I ask the candidates to respect the time limits for their responses. I'll reinforce time cues as needed during the debate. Through a random draw, we have determined that Jane Swigum will go first and Lauren Oldenburg will go second. Jane Swigum, the floor is yours for your opening statement.
Well, thanks for having me. I am Jane Swigum, and I am a native of Gays Mills, where I live with my husband, Ed. We have lived in this area, my family, since 1867. So our roots are quite deep here. And the reason why I'm running is because after 11 years of my opponent's party being in power, I am very dissatisfied with what we are getting. We still do not have health care for everyone. We don't have affordable housing and childcare, especially in the Driftless, which is really impacting employers' ability to hire. And our democracy is being slowly chipped away, which is very disturbing to me. Ultimately, the 1849 abortion law is the thing that has made this race a big deal. And I am 100% for the rights of women to decide how to determine what they do with their bodies.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg, the floor is yours for your opening statement.
Thank you very much. As the last 4 years as your state representative, I'm looking forward to serving another 2 years. But as a lifelong farmer, I live down here over by Chaseburg, fourth generation. I've been in the family for 144 years. So definitely been here in this area for all my life, and my family has been here too. So, and as the reasons why I run for this office, I believe it's number one, it's important to represent everyone here, you know, and I reach across both sides of the aisle. You know, I do bipartisan bills. I also make sure everyone has a voice out there, because, you know, you can talk to anyone out there, then I'm very accessible to them. And I will also, you know, answer phone calls any time of the day or night. So that's the reason why I'm here, to serve people, to represent them in the Madison and represent the 96th district, Western Wisconsin, to continue to grow Wisconsin as far as business, farming, and any small businesses. That's what we're well known for in the 96th.
Thank you, Representative Oldenburg. We go to our media panel now, beginning with Jordan Fremstead of WKBT News 8 Now. Jordan, a question that we will start with going to Jane Swigum.
Yeah, so the first question I have revolves around education. We've got more than 70 referenda with districts around the state asking taxpayers for more money. The district leaders are telling us that they receive no new money each year from the state legislature, and it makes it difficult for them to keep schools staffed and updated. So what will you do to level the playing field so that districts can invest in their staff and their students and facilities equally, so that every student gets the best education possible?
I believe that one of the problems we have with education in this state is that we are losing money to private businesses. The voucher school system is definitely taking away funds from public schools, and public monies need to stay in public schools. We also are victims of our zip codes around here. If you are from Gays Mills and go to North Crawford, we don't have the tax base that other counties, other school districts have. So we need to look at better funding and more equitable funding for schools. Going to North Crawford is definitely not the same as going to Brookfield. So we need to look at leveling the playing field for all of our students. And we also need to consider the repealing the Act 10 law, which I believe has directly influenced our teacher shortage here in Wisconsin. We are losing trained and new teachers to outlying states because they have better benefits and unions.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg.
Thank you. Yes, we have, that's one of the biggest budget items we have at the budget. You know, that's the, we put the most dollars into education throughout any other organization as far as the budget goes. This last time we put 2/3 funding, you know, a state funds 2/3 of the funding of school education. Also, I understand, you know, as Jordan mentioned, something we have, they say that we have not funded per student. The prior budget for this time, we did 200 in, I believe, in a 19 year and 204 in a second year per student funding. So these, most schools get roughly $10,000 to $12,000 per student from state aid for those education. So probably the biggest thing what's going on happened here, ESSER funds will run out in 2024. So we were going to have to, as a state, kind of fill in some of those voids that's going to happen with the federal money is going to disappear and kind of fill in what those places are going to be and the needs that are going to be shown. So
thank you, Representative Oldenburg. We go now to Joe Minnie. We'll start this next round with Representative Oldenburg. Joe, take it away.
Yes, hi. So with the, how do you plan to reduce the partisan politics in Wisconsin? The fostering cooperation between the legislature and the governor's office and the gavel in, gavel out tactic that prevents discussion on divisive issues. How do you plan on addressing that?
Well, number one, I mean, the communication between the governor and the legislators have been practically zero from the day one the governor got there. So I think the communication has to start. We've got three branches of government. Governor's one, we're one. I think the communication has to be better between them. So we actually, instead of trying to force us into session, let's come to the table and discuss these issues. And so we can kind of come together and deal with these certain issues as far as that goes. So also, you know, I listened to Tommy Thompson one time speak, and he would bring in the one party at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, the next party at 11 o'clock, and then they're all together at 2 o'clock every Tuesday of the week. I would like to see that being done so we, as citizens of Wisconsin, get the best product. You know, everyone's got good ideas from both sides. And we do 90%, 85 to 90% of the bills that are passed in the state legislature is bipartisan. So we just see the headlines that are not, you know, maybe partisan or bipartisan. So.
Thank you. Jane Swigham.
I agree that we are in a very divided state. And as my mom used to say, I don't care who started it, I'm finishing it. And so I believe that it doesn't matter which party is at fault with communication, or if it's the governor, or if it's the legislature, it doesn't matter. We need to start looking at all these issues as human issues. Until we do that, nothing happens for those of us working class people here in the 96. We need to, again, look at people as individuals. How can we best serve the people in our district? And we need to stop pushing this political party agenda nonsense that is going on. It is unfulfilling as a citizen here to know that I'm going to have to deal with a variety of things because our two parties cannot get along well enough to actually move meaningful legislation for people forward.
Thank you. We start our next round of questioning with Jane Swigham, and we go to Bob Heiss from the La Crosse Tribune.
Thank you. And I want to thank both of you for answering the questions for our readers. That is one of the things readers tell me they like the most in a campaign. My question is about the surplus, and I think it's about $3.8 billion now. I think Minnesota's even higher. What should be done with that? I think governors made a couple proposals, but should any of that come back to taxpayers, or what should actually be done with that? And can something be done with that in the short term?
Jane Swigum, the floor is yours.
The budget surplus could go to a variety of places because we have so many areas of need. As a nurse at 22 years in an emergency department, I can tell you that our healthcare needs to be addressed. We need to start looking at funding healthcare for more people in this state. So I would say put it towards healthcare. I would also agree to putting it towards education. I would agree to putting it toward police fire safety issues. One of my friends is a undersheriff here, and he says that the most difficult thing for them to deal with are the psychosocial issues, behavioral health. So we need to look at giving our different police entities monies to get qualified social workers involved in policing. That's the only way we're going to really be able to help people, and it will certainly decrease the burden on our police.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg.
Thank you. Yes, this projected budget surplus is, going to be something we're going to have to deal with, and everyone's going to have ideas how to spend it. And that's going to be probably one of the biggest issues we have to deal with. But I want to, I'd definitely go along with the tax cut, get the money back to the people that actually paid into it, especially the time of the economy that we're dealing with right now with high taxes or high gas prices. High food prices, the cost of living going up, especially going in here to the winter. So that would be my number one priority. And then I go back to the workforce. I mean, that is something that we have to address that affects businesses and how we all live out here. So childcare is one part of that. Also maybe improve the youth apprenticeship avenue of it to get kids or young people into their profession sooner and quicker. And not that debt load of education. So those kind of the few things. Also shared revenue for local municipalities. They're dealing with extreme inflation costs, no faults of their own. And I think some of that we have to address also.
Thank you. We start our next round with Representative Oldenburg, and we go to Ezra Wall of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks, Anthony. Representative Oldenburg, I want to circle back to the issue of education that Jordan started with today. And I know that policy decisions about education, curriculum standards, things like that are set at the state level and often influenced at the national level even. And yet we've seen a growing number of parents wanting to have more and more daily hands-on influence over specifically what their children are taught in schools. And that can be really taxing on teachers that are expected to do a lot. Is there a way that we can encourage that that parental hands-on involvement in their children's education without putting teachers in a position where they feel like they're being, micromanaged by every single parent in every single classroom?
I don't think it's a legislative issue that we want to have in state statutes. I believe that would be something that with superintendents, school boards, I think would have to have that talk between the two entities as far as that goes. I don't believe, truly believe parents need to be involved in what's getting educated to their children. And I think COVID really brought a light to that through the process of Zooms and stuff like that. And I think that's something that the local school board should have the authority and the power to decide on their own how they work. You don't want us to come in and say, hey, you got to do this and doing that. And I want to keep it that as local as possible, because those school boards are elected, all the time through here. So they know what those kids need. What happens here in Viroqua is different than happens in Madison or Milwaukee. So we want to keep that separate. So I believe it should be a local issue.
Thank you. Jane Swigum.
Well, as a former English teacher, I taught English for 7 years. I can tell you that it is very stressful to teach. And the communication between teachers and parents is way better than when I taught back in the 90s. There are so many different ways to communicate. And I think that most teachers do welcome the input of parents. I mean, parents know their children the best. The idea that somehow that involvement is going to become negative or unpleasant, I think, is putting the cart before the horse. Most of our students are good kids. They want to learn and their parents want them to be successful. That's what we all want. Teachers, neighbors, everybody wants their kid to do well in school and to have every advantage possible. So I think that we just need to keep those lines of communication open and parents can be in as involved as they would like.
Thank you. Let's head back to Jordan Fremstead of WKBT News 8 Now, and we'll start this round of questioning with Jane Swigum.
So I want to continue on this education topic since it is a big budget issue in Wisconsin. Just in the realm for teachers, you know, the Wisconsin Educator Effectiveness Research Partnership looked at the passage of Act 10 and how districts have experienced increased teacher turnover through retirements, transfers, teacher shortages. And this was before the pandemic. That's only continued. And then another report showed within a six-year period that programs had seen teachers leaving districts by dropping by more than a third. So I'm curious to know, like, what are three policies that you would introduce to reduce the brain drain effect across the state of Wisconsin and attract effective teachers to districts in the region that you represent?
The first thing we have to do is overturn Act 10. Act 10 was very short-sighted, and that's what we are seeing out of our legislature, short-sighted legislation. So we have to look at that, reversing it. One of the things that's happened for teachers is they feel like villains in Wisconsin. They are, I mean, the reason why Act 10 came through is because people thought that teachers were just had it too good. They don't need unions. It costs us too much money. So we have to reverse Act 10. Then we need to look at how do we retain these teachers. Wisconsin has excellent teacher training. We need to retain teachers. So there are things that we can do. Think of Northern Exposure, where a doctor went to a small area and gave of his services, and then his student loans were forgiven. We could do the exact same thing. There are so many ways to keep teachers. It's amazing. And one of them will be giving women the right to decide how they treat their bodies back.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg.
Yes, I mean, three kind of the policies I kind of look at, I talked to a lot of my superintendents, you know, they're not getting enough teachers applying for these jobs, and you're just plucking them away from other school districts and stuff like that. So number one, look at the pay scale as far as what the teachers are getting. Number two, maybe how can we get them into education a little bit sooner? Maybe through a youth apprenticeship as a education end, maybe so they're still might be a senior in high school, maybe you can get some of those credits, you know, at that level. So maybe they don't get into teaching quicker and sooner with not that debt holding over their head. Also, and say they went to a university and look system in Wisconsin, maybe looking to have how do they retain them in Wisconsin, don't leave the state. Maybe do, if they're here for 5 years, let's forgive some of that student loan debt if they service their teaching career in the state of Wisconsin. So kind of something like that, kind of out of the box ideas to get something done like that.
Thank you. We'll start the next round with Representative Oldenburg. And for this question, we go to Joe Minnie of WXOW News 19. Joe, take it away.
All right. Thank you very much. Safe drinking water in Wisconsin has come under scrutiny in light of PFAS contamination issues. What should Wisconsin be doing to ensure every Wisconsin resident can trust the water coming out of their tap? And has safe water become a partisan issue, and what can we do about that?
Well, I truly believe it's not a partisan issue because we all drink water. You know, normally, you know, I've drank water all my life out of a private well. So definitely we have to do testing and get a baseline where we are at as far as what's in our water. And then after that, we have to set some standards. I know up there in the town of Campbell with PFAS and stuff like that, everyone's fighting what is the correct standards and how it should look like. So we're kind of waiting for guidance on the federal side. But we have to figure out where that guidance is, and then we have to do something as a state side. I truly believe it's not a partisan issue, because I signed my name on a numerous bills of, what went through the studies of down there in Grant County and Iowa County and stuff like that. So, and what we came forward, I put my name on a lot of those bills as far as getting clean water, what they found in that task force study. So I don't think it's a partisan issue, and we got to keep studying and figure out what the best avenue is.
Thank you. Jane Swigum.
We in the Driftless are super lucky that we have these sky blue waters still, and we are not seeing the same damage happening yet. Holman is still drinking bottled water. And I do disagree that this is not a partisan issue, because there is legislation now put forward that if you accept monies from the state to help mitigate your PFAS issue with your drinking water, you cannot sue the person who polluted your water. You cannot take legal recourse. How is that not partisan when it came from my opponent's party? Another thing that makes this partisan is that our regulations in the state of Wisconsin have been slowly whittled away by my opponent's party, making it easier and easier for businesses to make money and to pollute our water.
I'd like to extend this round of questioning and give each candidate an additional 30 seconds. Representative Oldenburg, your response to your opponent saying that this is, in fact, a partisan issue.
Those bills were never actually passed, what she replies to. But I think, we have to not look back on what caused this problem, especially in the PFAS end, and let's find solutions. We can't point finger, hey, you do this. Let's change practices. We have passed bills in the past in the session that say, take the PFAS foam, of fighting fires, especially in the airports and stuff like that. We have passed, it was $1 million bill that give that rebate to take those foam and firefighter and repellents away from the fire department so they can find something else. So I believe it's not we're trying to find a correct and solution to, hey, we got an issue, let's get it done. And it's not point fingers who's did it and who didn't do it.
Thank you. And Jane Swigum, you have an additional 30 seconds.
The idea that legislation was not passed is not valid. The fact that it was even put forward is an issue. And the fact that, Mr. Oldenburg, you voted for these things. You voted in lockstep with Robin Voss on 269 issues out of 271. This is clearly a partisan issue, and it should not be. It absolutely shouldn't be, but it is.
We move on to our next round of questioning, and Jane Swigum will get this question from Bob Heiss of the La Crosse Tribune.
Another week, another special session was called, another special session was not held, and so these issues don't even get debated. I mean, and this isn't just an Evers problem, it goes back to Scott Walker's days too. What is going to get whether it's a special session or whether there's attention put on these issues that people have, because I have readers asking me, what are these legislators doing if they're not doing this?
Well, the gavel in, gavel out method of controlling the discourse needs to stop. We are effectively being silenced by the people that we have put into office. When the 1849 abortion law was gaveled out in 13 seconds, every single woman in the state of Wisconsin lost the right to control her own body. This is unacceptable. 71% of people in the United States believe that women should have the right to choose and that abortion should be legal and safe. This makes me sick that we are seeing this. And not once, but twice, the party in power has gaveled out on women's rights. This has to stop. You know, Mr. Oldenburg said that it shouldn't be a legislative issue. Don't come in and tell us to do this and to do that. The government needs to stay out of my doctor's appointments, and it starts immediately.
Thank you, Representative Oldenburg.
Yeah, as I had mentioned earlier, you know, as far as the special sessions, we need to sit down and talk. And that's leadership starts from leadership points. You know, all leaders, both parties at the legislators come together, the governor come together. Hey, let's figure out a solution to these issues instead of doing, hey, you got to come in session, because we have a process down there. You put a bill forward, it gets sent to a committee. We have a hearing on it. And go through, and that gets how a bill gets vetted. And it should not be vetted on the floor. It should be vetted before it gets to the floor. And then we debate it on the floor also. So the process, we say, hey, we're bypassing one vital part of how we do bills down there. And that is goes through the committee and goes through the hearing process. So every citizen of the state of Wisconsin can come down there and sit there for many hours and put their view on this, on a bill. And that's the way it should be done. And I believe it works, and it works very well.
Ezra Wall, to you for a question for Representative Oldenburg.
Thank you. In a couple of areas, including the PFAS issue that we see and other environmental quality issues we see, on the issue of the controversial wolf hunt that was held a year or so ago, you see scientific recommendations coming from government agencies, and you see some of the employees of those agencies who make decisions, some might say, based on politics, making decisions that are counter to what the scientists on their staff recommend. Is there a way that the legislature can encourage or even require the heads of state agencies to follow the scientifically evidence-based advice of their non-political staff instead of making political decisions out of scientific issues like environmental quality or wildlife preservation?
Well, I think, you know, as far as, you know, in each situation is separate, but we have a rule process down there. And I think that would maybe give you, hey, we have scientific here, this is what to do. And an agency puts a rule forward. And rules have come to, you know, I serve on the environmental committee for the last 4 years, and we deal with a lot of rules through the DNR put forth and comes to the committee, sent out to the members and say, hey, do we want to have a hearing on this rule? And I think that's a great process. It kind of goes same hearing process as we go through the bill process. And that way everyone can weigh in. The agency comes in and say, hey, this is why we need this. This is why we need the rule. So let's go that way. And I think that might take the party policy, you know, partisan out of the situation and kind of follow what needs to be done.
Thank you. Jane Swigum.
Well, one of the issues that we have is that after Scott Walker got into office, they completely gutted the DNR of their scientists. That is unacceptable. We need to get the DNR back to the science-based organization that it is. And we need to make sure that these people that are working there are not going to be hounded out of a job. Which is kind of what happened to a lot of people. They got a lot of grief, and those scientists have left. And there are groups of them who continue to come around. I met several groups when I went to my friend Tucker Gredebeck's farm for a farm tour with them. And they are amazing, and they are so focused on trying to keep everything clean and moving and unpolluted. We have to get these people back into the DNR, and the sooner the better.
Thank you. Jane Swigum gets the next question from Jordan Fremstead of WKBT News 8 Now.
Obviously, everything is more expensive for families right now. I want to talk about childcare. It continues to be a major problem for communities. What will you do to bring those resources to your region so families have the resources to work and live in these smaller communities?
Well, first, it's not just childcare, it's affordable housing. But the question is about childcare. We have the ability to assist students who want to go to school to become perhaps childcare certified, to help people get their homes set up to be a childcare legally in the state. But they are not getting that assistance. They are being paid terribly. The minimum wage is what most of these people are earning that are working, taking care of the children of everyone in the area. So we have to look at increasing our minimum wage. That is not a living wage. $7.25 an hour is not a living wage, and these people are going to be paid that, so they don't want these jobs. Living wage, we have to get going. We also have to make sure that we offer incentives for people to go to school. If you go to school to be an early childhood person and you complete your training and you stay here in the Wisconsin area, you should get some sort of benefit, whether it is a tax cut or help on your student loan.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg.
Yes, this is an issue that we've been talking for the last couple of years down in at the Capitol. We've been hearing issues from young parents, the workforce out there, and I think we have to continue to address that. I was fortunate enough to go to a kind of a ribbon cutting out there in Viroqua here. They got, Viroqua School District got a grant from the Department of Children and Family to business around Southwest Wisconsin is to increase the childcare with through the school district. They're going to open up a school, a building for they have childcare from little on all the way up to pre-K. And I think we have to address some of those kind of out of the box ideas and maybe fund some of these grants, see how it's working. So, hey, they got a place, you know, all the way through. Viroqua Library is also doing an after school program. So from 3 to 5, when the parents are still working, those kids can go there. So those kind of ideas are like kind of out of the box that we got to fund and see what they're, how they're working. So parents can actually go to their jobs and continue working and doing their jobs.
Thank you. Joe Minnie of WXOW News 19 has our next question, a question for Representative Oldenburg.
Yeah, hi. So Badger Care and federal Medicaid helps a lot of people get access to health care for those whose income levels meet the eligibility requirements. But does Wisconsin need to expand Badger Care or subsidies for those individuals and families that don't qualify for these programs, but still have it find it difficult to afford health care?
Well, Badger Care represents certain people. And then if you can't don't provide or don't fall under that, you can have access to the Affordable Care Act. And under the Affordable Care Act covers 100% of the cost going to the hospitals, gets reimbursed back to there and stuff. The big issue I can see under all healthcare is the deductibles. And so I kind of like to want to kind of think outside the box also on this and possibly how can we address the high deductibles? And it covers all private insurance for through the Affordable Care Act. So let's maybe create kind of a statewide HSA account somehow, do a matching thing to help reduce those high deductibles. And that's what I kind of like to see. With the higher increased wages, I know some people probably don't call for Badger Care anymore because the wages have gone up in the state of Wisconsin. So I believe we'll have to deal with these high deductibles, and I'd like to see something done there.
Thank you. Jane Swigum.
The cost of living, our inflation rate is the highest it's been in 40 years, and corporate profit is the highest it's been in 50 years. We absolutely need to expand Badger Care. We need to accept the federal monies to do so. We need to increase the income limit to I would say, 150% of what it currently is. There are tons of people. My neighbor just down the road is a hardworking CNA, and she cannot afford not only the deductible, but her part of premiums for private insurance. This is not just about deductibles. This is about getting people taken care of without having to worry that they are going to go broke. Our deductibles are a minor issue. The lack of control over our private insurance industry is sick. It is just sick. We have to do something to help every person. Every one of our neighbors should be able to go to a doctor and get primary care.
Thank you. We go to Bob Heiss of the La Crosse Tribune for our next question, a question for Jane Swigum.
What did we learn from the, I guess it's about $1 million that went into the Gableman investigation? What did we learn? And then the other part of this is, do you hear people talking, being concerned about election integrity at the local level?
The $1 million that were blown on this investigation, which had already been investigated and shown to show no voter fraud, was a complete waste of taxpayer money. That is ridiculous. This was a fabricated issue. There has never been an issue with our voting in the state of Wisconsin. An occasional person may try to vote in two places, but that is not going to swing an entire election. We have to make sure that every eligible voter is going to be able to vote. There has been legislation written to purge our voter rolls. If you're registration address and your DMV address don't match. What is that all about? Do you know how many people move and move and move because they can't afford the housing around here? And now they're going to be taken off voter registries because they have had to move? This is unacceptable.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg.
Yes. Yeah, we did not find much of anything out of that $1 million. I'm very disappointed in how it all turned up. I know there's, as far as looking into certain these areas, the mayors of the big cities did not respond for his subpoenas and stuff like that. We thought we could find some information. But go back to the second part of that question. Are we hearing things out there on as far as vote? It has calmed down tremendously as far as the last election. And we definitely have to move on from the last election as far as that goes. My biggest concern, and out of that whole investigation, what we did not find out is what did the Zuckerberg money that he stuck into the last election, what did that actually, you know, why was that money needed? Because these elections are funded already. We do not need outside money to run our elections. So why outside money needs to be done to run our elections? Because we have great elections around here. Our clerks do 100% excellent job, and we got to support them at all levels.
Representative Oldenburg, I want to follow up on that with a question for you in our next round of questioning. This question was submitted to me by the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area. The question is, where do you stand on the authority and integrity of the Wisconsin Elections Commission? What, if any, changes to election administration in Wisconsin do you support?
Well, it has gone from all the way around. Used to be, you know, this WEC was formed under the Walker administration, I believe in 2013, supposed to be bipartisan, you know, 3-3, it should be equal and stuff like that. I don't think it's, you know, not doing what is thought it would be doing. I thought it would take the uncertainty out of elections and stuff, but we have great laws already on the books. And these clerks know the laws. So I think guidance from anyone, they just have to go through state statutes and read them and follow the law. And I think that's where it should be done. And I don't think we need guidance from WEC or wherever. Just follow what the law says and go from there. It should not be changed. One time you can correct, you know, the witness signatures. Next time you can't. Let's follow the law, what it is, and go from there.
Thank you. Jane Swigum.
My opponent just said that he was disappointed in the results of the $1 million investigation into voter fraud. I find that laughable. We know that our elections are secure here in Wisconsin. Our neighbors are the people going to the polls and doing the voting tallying. These are not bad people. These are normal, regular old folk who are basically donating their time to help us vote. Our Elections Commission needs to make sure that whatever the results are, that they are correct, and that there is no question in the integrity of our elections. They are doing that well. They are doing it very well. And I'm quite disgusted by the implication that any of our elections here in Wisconsin have been somehow tampered with by big outside money.
Representative Oldenburg, I'd like to extend this round of questioning and give you 30 seconds to follow up on what your opponent said.
She said
your comments were laughable.
For what the results were. You know, the investigation started, and I don't think we got anything that we needed to be. And go back to the biggest thing is, what did that, why is there outside money coming in these elections to run these big, big cities? I don't understand it, and I don't know why it's coming.
Jane Swigum.
Why is outside money coming into our election from the Republicans in Madison for you to have negative campaigning sent out about me? That is ridiculous. I am a nurse, a grandma, and a gray-haired little old lady. I don't have anything to be ashamed of, and the idea that your party is trying to slam me is sick. So if we're going to talk about outside monies coming in, let's get to campaign finance.
We go now to Ezra Wall of Wisconsin Public Radio, a question for Jane Swigum.
Jane, you talked for a second briefly about people who have a hard time affording housing. And so I want to ask on a legislative level whether anything can be done about that in our larger, well, not even larger, but in mid-sized cities near your region, housing inventory is really, really tight. And in the smaller towns, it's almost non-existent. And for people to get into an affordable, basic family starter home that is in good repair and doesn't need major renovation costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. What can the legislature do to move the needle on affordable housing?
Well, how about we don't have to reinvent the wheel and we look at the tiny village of Gays Mills, who as part of flood recovery has worked with a community group called Community Development in Prairie du Chien. They assisted the village here in getting grants and loans in order to build affordable housing. We now have five new beautiful apartment buildings that are based on income for those who need income-based rent, and they are also a flat rate rent for those who don't qualify for income-based. This gives us a mix of people from a variety of socioeconomic groups. It is just a wonderful asset for people here, and it allows us to get people housing who are coming here to work at one of our larger businesses, which is BAPI here in town. And it, to me, this is something that is a no-brainer. It does not need to be reinvented. We are already doing it in a lot of our small communities. Let's take it further.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg.
Yes, there's a lot going on in the communities. I know one in Verulco, one in Prairie du Chien also, doing multiple housing through the through this grant process, through USDA grants, to local Wisconsin Economic Development grants, continue those things. Also, we have to maybe give them a little tax break on these developers as far as, these cities through the TIF process. They get that tax, keep the taxes within, so they keep developing. That's a great program that I want to see continue and expand, but also bring in developers, say, hey, take some of that risk, and especially on these low economical areas that are not vibrant and stuff like that. So we got to continue in that way as far as putting more dollars in these small local communities.
Let's head over to WKBT News 8 Now's Jordan Fremstead with a question for Representative Oldenburg.
Go back to school finance a little bit. I was having a conversation with a district superintendent the other day, or a former superintendent, and we were talking about, equitable funding and that two-thirds funding that you mentioned. And what's interesting is like a school district like Holman, for example, is considered poor based on the tax base there, the property values, and then your student body ratio. But then like a school district like DeSoto has very high property values that they're really small. And so you get, there's a little inconsistency there in terms of how the money is divvied out from the state and the tax base. Does something need to change there? And if so, what would you change?
Yes, I believe that is some of the issues here, because down in DeSoto, they got the bluff land that's very high taxable. you know, and then Holman, which is growing huge, gets more per student. So we have to look at that per student. This not on a tax, you know, roll base as far as what your property is and stuff. We have to look at, okay, DeSoto, that size, don't have the economic engine to run that school as far as businesses and stuff like that. We have to per student investment. But the problem is we get per student investment, you know, increase, it goes through everyone through the state. You know, some of these rich ones down in the southeastern part of the state don't need that extra per student. So let's put that to places sort of the smaller, like DeSoto, as far as, hey, they need that per student, get good teachers, keep the teachers, and run their school. So I think that has to be adjusted, not so much on what the value of the land is, but what that school is actually doing.
Thank you. Jane Swigum.
Well, our kids' education should have nothing to do with the tax base in their area. Their zip code should not affect their quality of education. And as Mr. Oldenburg said, these larger school districts with high tax bases, their kids are getting a different quality of education than the ones here at North Crawford. So we have to look at not only making sure that these schools are getting financing, but that it is equitable. You know, if you, those with great wealth have great responsibility, and that is how they could help us in this area. We are a poor district. And our people are not buying these super expensive homes. Right now, we're seeing the gentrification of this area. And you know that even though those prices are going crazy high right now, our education is not going to be changed here in Gays Mills. It's time to fix this.
Thank you. Joe Minnie of WXOW News 19 leads off our next round of questioning. A question for Jane Swigum.
Okay, thank you. Well, the 96th Assembly District is predominantly rural, and what still needs to be done at the state level to ensure farmers can still operate and be prosperous?
Well, you know, in a rural area, our farmers are getting subsidies in order to continue to be able to afford to farm. And it's been going on for years. So those subsidies need to be looked at, but we also need to look at ways to assist farmers to do more farming with sustainable ways to do it. And we all know the easiest way to get kicked off a farm with the farmer's boot in your butt is to tell them how to farm. So we have to make sure that what we're doing is not only something that we think is good, but is going to work with our farmers in a way that they can determine how it goes and if they wish to do it. Again, farmers are fantastic. I come from a family full of them here in Crawford County. And we have to keep our farm base going. This is not just an economy. It is a way of life.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg.
Yes, as a lifelong farmer and still do farming, I think what's happening now here in the farming community is technology. Technology is growing fast. And so especially when coming to the planning or how you put the crops in, how you put fertilizer on the ground. Technology is there that we can specialize that product so it does not get over fertilized, does not affect the water then. So that kind of practices at a state level, if we can do anything, maybe give them some incentive, tax credit, however that looks like, to go use that technology going forward if they want to. You know, we're not forcing it down their throat if they want to do that. Also, kind of, as a last two sessions, I proposed a farmland preservation tax credit increase. And I believe this way, everyone, all the farmers out there under this plan would have to do a 590 nutrient plan if they want to sign up for it. Like you say, it's not forced on them, but they would get a tax credit. And that helps how they farm, how they fertilize their land, and also creates a better water. So it's not the runoff, not ground run water will get better. So.
Thank you. We go now to Bob Heiss of the La Crosse Tribune. A question for Representative Oldenburg.
I agree that the divisive stuff gets more attention and the bipartisan achievements don't. So I wanted to give you a chance to tell us one of the best bipartisan examples out of the last session and what you think going into the next session, if you're elected, could be done in a bipartisan way, in a good way.
Well, I just got to go back to what I, you know, the bills that I've done. Youth apprenticeship, AB 220. It's a bill that actually, you know, tells the school district that youth apprenticeship is available to all students. And was bipartisan, went through the legislation process, got signed by the governor. One of his first ads on his reelection was AB 220. He signed it. So it's bipartisan. He took credit for it. That's fine. He got the job done. I don't care. And so those little things that we do as far as bills that we pass that does not get the headlines unless we put a press release out. Just that example alone on AB 220. I'm proud of the bill, and I don't care how it got done. It's out there. It's good for the youth.
Thank you. Jane Swigum.
Well, I commend Mr. Oldenburg for that youth apprenticeship. Absolutely. It is a beautiful, beautiful way for people to get training who may otherwise not be able to. And that is fantastic. But there are ways that we can cooperate as party members to make things better for the people around here. We need to look at, in particular, our healthcare situation. You know, what do I have to do? Do I have to take the mom from the emergency department whose three-year-old is now being worked up for a brain tumor and they have no insurance? That is a human issue. And if our politicians, if the people that we put into office would simply view these things as how it affects the people in their district, we would all be working together beautifully. But it's not happening yet, but it is certainly my hope that we will focus on people.
Thank you. We go to Ezra Wall of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we start this round with Jane Swigum.
Thanks very much. You've indicated several times today your support for abortion rights, and I'm wondering, though, a legislative action allowing abortion rights under all circumstances seems really unlikely in Wisconsin's current political climate. Is there any level of incrementalism or any level of compromise that you'd be willing to accept on that issue as a first step, or is that an all or nothing issue for you?
Well, as a pro-choice person, first, I want to correct people's notion that we are pro-abortion, because nobody is. And if we were able to wave a magic wand and make sure that the only pregnancies that were occurring were wanted pregnancies, that would be great. But we would still need legal abortion without any restrictions. Terrible things happen during pregnancy that can endanger the mother, that can kill a fetus. And the removal of that fetus from the mother is still viewed as a criminal act. That is unacceptable. We have to keep our noses out of this. Now, as far as how far along someone can be, don't even try to argue with me that someone is going in at 39 weeks and 6 days to have an abortion. It's not happening. It is a bunch of malarkey that is brought forward to put fear into people. We have to get this together and look at it as a medical issue.
Thank you. Representative Oldenburg.
Yes, I believe we have to take up this issue the next session here and have a good debate on it. And 1849 law is way too long ago, and we have to come and bring that up to today's standards. And yes, I would do some exceptions, especially incest and rape. There was no fault of that person to go through that. Two wrongs don't make a right. So I believe that we will have to address that. And I would definitely get behind something like that.
Thank you. We head over to Jordan Fremstead of WKBT News 8 Now, a question for Lauren Oldenburg.
So I wanted to talk again about just childcare and the resources there. Obviously, trying to bring more resources in, but the resources that we do have in these rural communities, if people can even get in at all, the cost of those, facilities are often unbearable for these families. What are some things that we can do to address that?
Number one, first part as far as childcare, we have to get the people that want to provide that childcare. That's through the education. So we have to give them some kind of a tax break, some kind of incentive to go into the childcare business or profession. So it is more able to define that person there. And then I don't know if it's a licensing issue or a regulatory issue. Those things have to be looked at also, but we have to give access to them. And I think it comes right down to pay for that person put it out there. We have to have more of it. So either increase wages for that child care provider to give them more opportunity out there and give them local close access, you know, like Quick Trip. They just opened up their new one up through the business, open it up there. I know Prairie du Chien has been trying to get part of the business be involved in their child care through the, and also through the state through the local municipalities. I think it's everyone kind of come to the board, the local government, also the businesses and state.
Thank you. Jane Swigum.
I agree that we need incentives for people to enter into childcare as workers. I totally agree. And I do think that it is a great idea to have an incentive. But let's go back. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. It used to be that all of our technical schools were free. Free. You graduated from high school and you could go to a technical school and not pay any tuition. My aunt graduated before World War II, and she went to business school for 2 years. We need to do similar things to that for people who are going into childcare. And frankly, into any of the highly needed careers that we are short of in Wisconsin. And I think this should be expanded to help everybody. And our wage absolutely needs to be increased.
Jane Swigum, we're coming right back to you. We have reached the closing statement round. You have 1 minute.
As a registered nurse, I have been taking care of people for 22 years. I have been a fierce advocate for my patients. And as a representative, that will serve me very well to represent the people of this district. I can pretty much assure you that I view every individual as important. I can tell you, I am focused on helping the individual people. I will go the extra mile for my patients, and I will go the extra mile for the people in this district. There is no question in my mind that we have got to get affordable healthcare going, and how now we have to do this. We have to make sure that our kids are getting excellent educations, and we have to get women the right to control their bodies back. No exceptions. We are simply going to be looking at tragedy after tragedy if we do not get that back.
Thank you, Representative Oldenburg.
Thank you for hosting this and having us here for this debate. And I appreciate the time also. Yes, I'm looking forward here for the next 2 years, like I've done the last 4 years, be accessible to everyone. You can go out there and talk to anyone. I'm always around, going to everything as I can. So people can come talk to me anytime. They can call me, like I said before, anytime. So I want to continue to bring my expertise in the co-op law, co-op. I've been board president of my local two co-ops up to until I got elected. I was past county township chair. So this, that expertise on the township activities for shared revenue and all that kind of going levy limits and stuff like that. I understand that. I understand their needs and wants. So that kind of stuff, I want to continue to work with the state down there. Also continue youth apprenticeship going forward. I want to continue to expand that. And also flood mitigation. Continue working on that because that's an issue that we always continue to have in the 96th district. And I would love to continue to work for you.
Thank you, Lauren Oldenburg. Thank you, Jane Swigum. Thank you to our outstanding media panel. Most of all, thanks to you, our audience, for joining us for this debate. From the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, I'm Anthony Tregoski.
The preceding was election special coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio.